down.
Brother, what's up? This
is a hey, big party, doing? Man.
Yeah,
I
brother,
can dig it.
Stop right on.
There's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many.
Good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Good morning to you, Calvin. How you doing?
I'm doing good, Earl. How are you?
I'm doing fine, man. I got this guy in the studio, and I've always
what's he doing here?
Well, let me tell you who the guy is, who he reminds me of.
Oh,
and I mean, man, just the height, the physical makeup. One of my favorite actors of all times, Robert Ryan. Hey, Robert Ryan, how you doing?
Robert Ryan. Well, luckily, nobody in the listening audience knows who Robert Ryan is.
Oh, they have to know who Robert Ryan is.
Only if they watch old black and white movies.
I watch old black and white movies.
Yeah.
Robert, you that's who you remind me of.
I sort of thought it was Jimmy Stewart.
Jimmy Stewart? No. Robert Ryan.
Okay.
Robert Ryan was a great actor. And man, he played.
I gotta have to Google him now to figure out what kind of a.
You don't remember who Robert Ryan?
Well, I will when I see who it is.
Yeah,
I think Robert.
Did you get to see him?
I have. I will.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I've been watching a lot of Robert Ryan movies, and I'm
it's
watching.
Okay, I'm looking at Denzel Washington.
And I said, that's who Sandy reminds me of, Robert Ryan.
Huh.
You know, Robert Ryan was, you know, he played in a lot of, what do you call those movies? There's a term, a name for those.
Noir
movies. And so I still do it, man. I mean, that's my habit, man, watching noir movies, the old gangster movies.
Yeah.
I don't care how many times I watch them. I'm going to keep watching them and I keep getting excited about them all the time, man. 1930s a little early.
40s.
Yeah, 40s,
late
50s.
40s. Late 40s, yeah. Early 50s was the, yeah.
And because the...
Jimmy Cagney.
The film, yeah. What's the guy's name? Sing?
Oh, wasn't that Jimmy Cagney?
Was that Jimmy Cagney or was that...
oh, boy.
Wasn't Jimmy Cagney, it was...
We'll think of it.
Yeah, what's that other guy's name? Little short, dumpy kind of guy. There's somebody who knows who it is already. Let's find out who that is.
See?
That wasn't Jimmy Cagney. That was, who is that, man? Calvin's going to bring it on, but he's one of my favorite guys. You don't remind me of him, though.
No. I do. He was a short guy.
Yeah. Why can't we think of that guy's name? But that's why we have people in the audience. They'll tell us who it is.
Yeah.
In the meantime,
that's why.
Oh, why?
That's why we have people in the audience.
Oh,
keep set us straight.
Yeah. Jimmy Cagney.
I remember.
Yeah. Anyway,
red-haired guy.
Yeah,
ex-boxer.
Did you find out who it is?
That was Northwoods Terry calling in. He said actor Robert Ryan.
No, actor Robert Ryan is who Sandy reminds me of.
Oh, okay. Oh.
Yeah. Jimmy, what is the guy's name? Anyway.
Okay.
As Sandy delves into this earth-shattering information that we've got to get fixed before we can move forward with the show. Let me go here, Sandy. There's so much stuff going on right now. How do you transition from Robert Ryan to Operation Prosperity? So for those of you who don't know, there are some things going on in the Red Sea that is really of utmost importance to our military, to our nation, and to the chain. The United States has announced a new maritime...
Edward G. Robinson.
Edward G. Robinson. See?
We got that pinned down. Yeah. Well, you know, this. You know the Red Sea thing, if you look at a map, okay, a geography, you look at the Red Sea, and it actually feeds into the Suez Canal. The Suez Canal is a vitally important waterway because if you don't have the Suez Canal...
Supply line, right?
In order to get from East Asia to Europe, you have to go around the Horn of Africa, which is a very long trip and a dangerous one at that. And it takes lots of fuel and lots of time. And so the Red Sea is what is the feeder into the Suez Canal. And the Houthis, which are an Iranian-backed group in Yemen, have, for the purpose of backing the Palestinians and protesting against the Hamas, the war between Israel and Hamas, have started shooting missiles, drones, et cetera, at shipments that are in the Red Sea and obviously headed to the Suez. And, you know, it's a choke point, and it's pretty easy pickings because of the smallness of the Red Sea. And then the Suez Canal itself is not much bigger than a freeway in terms of its scale. Yes, this operation, which is multinational, I think it's Norway and a whole bunch of the shipping nations, have decided to get together and try to defend the merchant vessels that are at risk based on Houthi attacks. And while the Houthis said that they were going to focus their attacks on boats headed to Israel in support of what they said could be in support of the Israeli war with Hamas, it looks like they've been attacking vessels generally. So This is a movement to try and defend merchant shipping, and it's probably warranted from the world interest standpoint.
You know, the supply chain is one of those things that clearly is being interrupted, and so the United States is without question the one nation that can organize this and the money necessary to move vessels, you know, into that area, right?
I mean, well, yeah, I mean, but, you know, you take Norway is actually a big shipping. Some of the biggest shipping companies are headquartered in Norway. The people with a huge interest in shipping are very interested in this problem because the European Union relies heavily on vessels being able to get through the Suez Canal.
But our military allows us the ability to do these kinds of things where other nations don't have that. Is it safe to say that? I mean, if we don't do it, who's going to do it?
Well, I think the British, I think the coalition of the British, Norwegians, et cetera, I think this is one of those circumstances where the U.S.'s military might is probably not necessary. Maybe some of our technological capacity to create air defense against the kind of missiles and drones that are being used is probably very helpful. But this is not a big-scale military effort. This is really just a focused effort.
Yeah. You know, you just – anything that says, you know, the United States is going to have some kind of involvement in anything right now, it makes you scratch your head because we got so many things going on that they may not all be big, Sandy, but they add up, right?
Well, and also we should understand that things are related, okay? So if we tie ourselves up someplace and lessen our capacity to defend our actual strategic interests, our actual strategic interests might be more at risk than they otherwise would be because whoever could identify the fact that we've got one hand tied behind our back by being too involved someplace else. So that's the reason why I hark back to this whole realpolitik concept. We shouldn't get ourselves mired in circumstances that are not a matter of our real strategic interest because it lessens our capacity to deal with real strategic interests.
I have to ask you, though, we shouldn't, but I think we can't help but do these things because that's the way we've been doing it.
Well, this particular venture of fighting the Houthis in terms of them trying to obstruct international transport is much easier to reconcile with our real strategic interest than some of the other things we've done in the past. This is a matter of real strategic interest for the U.S. and for the world generally. The Suez Canal is a vital waterway, much the way the Panama Canal is.
And so the people may ask why the Houthis doing it. Well, as you stated, they're in support of the Palestinians and what is going on in the war with Israel and the Palestinians. So they weren't doing it prior to that.
Right. So, I mean, things are connected, right?
Right.
So, and we have to understand that just as things were connected with the Ukrainian war, which, you know, once it started, had an impact on the commodity price of gas, the commodity price of oil, had a lot to do with problems in supply chains. It has created an inflationary pressure that was felt around the world. And so we have to understand that things that don't happen in a vacuum and things that we get involved with better be matters of extreme interest, because there will be consequences.
Should the American people ever know, do we have a right to know about our foreign policy objectives?
What?
Do the American people have a right to know that?
Well, it certainly. And in fact, you know, the problem is that it's, you know, we've evolved to the point where it's all done very paternalistically, right? They know better than us. They don't bother to discuss it with us. Congress doesn't bother to become very involved other than to take its signals on what constitutes patriotism and then to require that of all of us, you know. And so, that's where I think we need to wake up. We need to become involved with an actual debate that formulates our foreign policy.
So I want to delve a little deeper into that on the other side. 844-967-2789. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays with my co-host Sandy Williams.
Robert Ryan.
But Ryan. Yeah, that's his name. So who is that, Sandy?
This isn't Chopin, I don't think.
I think that is Chopin, isn't it?
Is it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
You got a good memory.
Well, I took this course in college that I basically slept through, but it was basically classical music, and you had to identify, you know, composers by listening to a few bars.
So people may say, hey, and I tell people, I like classical music.
Yeah.
And I learned classical music. You know, I got an opportunity as a young boy to go to the symphony. I don't know, was it 10, 11 years old? And the church that I was involved with would take us to the symphony. And I just something soothing about symphony music, right?
Oh yeah, I mean it's really interesting, the evolution of it and what it's become, but it's genius, you know, the melding together of all those instruments, and it's mesmerizing.
Yeah, and the story that they're telling with it, and anyway, we were talking about before we went to break. Welcome back. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. We're at 540 AMWAUK in Waukesha. Good morning to all of you in the listening audience. It's Tuesday. I mean, it's Tuesdays with my co-host Sandy Williams, but we were talking, Sandy, about American foreign policy and the fact that a lot of the things that we wind up issues that impact and affect us, we have no concept at all about. It's secretive. We're told, I guess, really, it's none of your business. We don't inquire about it because we don't know about it, right? We have no concept of what our nation does supposedly in our name. But it impacts and affects our lives entirely.
Well, absolutely. And I think that's part of the demise of our newspaper industry, because to the extent that we were educated about these things, it was the news media that helped us understand it. It was the news media that uncovered the things that were being done. And that just doesn't happen much anymore. We only have a couple of newspapers that are capable of doing it. And then we have the credibility problem associated with the news media, because you know, either it's your newspaper or my newspaper, but it's not our newspaper. You know, it's either a conservative newspaper or a liberal newspaper, and we don't believe the other one. And that's pretty much not the way it used to be. I mean, news media had biases that they presented on their opinion pages, but people read newspapers pretty voraciously. And they read read and understood things that were being told them.
So, we back in our time, you know, Walter Cronkite and those kind of guys would be on, and they would tell us about the kinds of things that we're getting ready, what we're involved in. It was on television. You could see it.
Yeah, I just read a thing that said that during Walter Cronkite's period, he was the most trusted person in America under any poll that they took. You know, who do you trust? Who do you believe? And the answer that almost everyone gave universally was Walter Cronkite, because he was, in fact, quite a neutral news person who was providing news and analyzing news, not bias.
And the reason that's important, Sandy, is because we get into these things and then they say, well, it's a threat to our democracy. We're involved in this because it's a threat to our democracy.
Right.
And we're like, okay, how is it a threat to our democracy?
Exactly. You know, that's the part that has been stretched to its limit. And it's verbiage that came out of the Cold War, right? Because the Cold War, we were all instructed that communism was a threat to democracy, and that the world was in a battle, a Cold War, that was between ideologies, essentially democracy and communism. And it was very simplistically presented. And it was simplistically analyzed, and it led to a very simplified foreign policy, one that wasn't terribly complicated. The only times it got complicated was the sort of secret stuff we were doing in South America, for instance, with Peru and Chile and the countries down there where we were dabbling in their politics, usually for reasons of things like Chiquita Banana and, you know.
and the sugar.
Yeah, sugar and oil and what have you. But our foreign policy today is necessarily much more complicated and nuanced, because we don't have the black and white world that we had from World War II until 1990. And it's those nuances that we are failing to be instructed about or taught about or learn about through a news media that no longer exists, and a government that has gotten used to saying, look, we have to keep things secret, because there's an importance to secrecy about what we do internationally. And then every once in a while, out of those secrets emerges some new foreign policy we've adopted, which then becomes part of the litmus for American patriotism.
So, Sandy, do you think a lot of these things have surfaced because, going back to coming out of World War II, we were the only power, basically?
Well, out of World War II, we weren't the only power. The Soviet Union was a very formidable military power. They had, in fact, you know, when people were honest with themselves, they were the ones who, in fact, had destroyed the German military and caused the end of the European War by dint of their willingness to stand up. They were the only country in Europe that stood up to Hitler, okay? And they were the ones that stood up and stood him down in the process of almost, you know, a huge loss of life in the Soviet Union. But, you know, the Americans won the Pacific theater, the Russians won the European theater.
So part of all of this, I think, is...
Now, let me say, the Americans, through their supplies, had a great deal to do with the European theater, because we were an industrial power at that point that was free from being encumbered by having war fought on our ground. So, you know, we played a big role that way. But after World War II, it was clear that there were two superpowers, the United States and the Soviet Union. And that fell apart in 1990.
All right, 844-967-2789 is the number. When we come back, you know, we're going to talk about Donald Trump for a little bit. And we have no choice because of the things that he is saying, Sandy, that I think really are terrifying. And people really need to take a long, hard look at that. 844-967-2789 is the number. Don't touch that dial. No, Sandy, that's Charlie Brown's Christmas.
Oh, that's
Hymn.
Is it really?
No, I mean it's Bach music, but yeah. It was Linus who played on. You remember Charlie Brown?
Oh yeah,
Christmas
absolutely,
Hymn, right?
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah, back to the Earl Ingram Show, Sandy.
It's good to be back.
Sandy forgot good the Charlie Brown.
No, Christmas. I did not forget. Okay. No. I can even remember the cover with Charlie. Yeah. Charlie hunched over the
Linus.
Piano or Lion. Yeah.
Yeah, Linus,
yeah,
the guy playing it. Anyway, well, 844, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. Hey, Sandy, Donald Trump is using some verbiage, which is not surprising. He's really, Sandy, ramped up an ugly chapter.
Yeah. I mean, this term you're talking about, the poisoning the blood of America,
right.
The notion that immigrants are poisoning the blood. I mean, blood purity is a concept that was the Aryan race, right? That goes all the way back to a horrifying period of world history in which a nation fell prey for this notion of racial purity. And the idea of purging the poison from the blood, in that case, it was led to the Holocaust, led to the purging of anything that was on the margins in Germany. So there was a purge of gypsies and Jews, and it was all done in the name of blood purity. And now we've got someone talking about that very same thing, Chris Christie. Euphemistically spoke out and called it a dog whistle. And a dog whistle is a way of saying that someone is saying something that only can be heard subliminally, right? The message is benign, but beneath the benign message is something that is pretty dangerous. Well, this message isn't benign. This is a dangerous message on its face, okay? It isn't a dog whistle. It's a direct call for racial purity. It's the whole basis for the kind of conflicts that we saw in Serbia with Bosnia It's the kind of it's a racial purity call, and it is the basis for the worst form of tribalism. You know, mankind has been emerging from the DNA tribal instincts of DNA racial purity for centuries. We've been trying to get over this, and every once in a while, someone will blow the whistle and try and hearken back to it. And here is Donald Trump doing it on its face, and it's happening across the world. Quite frankly, there's this whole tribal purity that is the basis for the anti-immigration movement in Europe. You know, we care about immigration only when the people coming to this country look different than us. We didn't have the same cry for purity when the Irish were entering or the Polish were entering this country, but now it looks different, right?
You know, Sandy, the thing that is so frustrating to me is that when we talk of Americans are made up of people from all across the world. There is no, you know, nationality American.
Well, I would hope that Nikki Haley, okay, a child of an immigrant who probably doesn't meet the purity formula for blood that Donald Trump would want to hold people to. I hope she stands up to this. I hope she talks about it, and I hope she pulls the alarm bell for the growing group of people who are following her, because this is truly alarming. This is the talk of not just authoritarianism, but a horrible nightmare.
You know, historians know what came of this kind of language, what came along with it. And I would say to people who know this is wrong, right? And yeah. And who he's trying to rally, understand what we're talking about here, right? This is a division of the nation. This is not a coming together of the nation.
Well, and let me just say that sitting across the table from someone who's African American, you know, we have a significant population within this country who don't meet the blood purity rules that he apparently is enunciating when he talks about poisoning the blood of America, because I think he must be making reference to something that he would also call the Judeo-Christian heritage of America, which is another dog whistle discussion associated with basically talking about Europeans who became Americans as being the fabric of America that needs to be preserved. And how fallacious can that be? You know, how wrong can that be?
Let's do this. Let's go to the phone lines. And Scotty from Racine, good morning to you, Scotty. You say what?
Oh, hello. I just wanted to say you opened up a little by talking about our international relations. And if we think about that, the Cold War being over, is it? If we think about history, we need to remember that, yes, Russia did defeat Hitler, and that's with our help, of course. But before Russia defeated Hitler, Hitler invaded Russia, and Hitler was stupid and decided to waste an army in Stalingrad. And had he enlisted the aid of the Ukrainians, who hated the Russians at the time, and armed them, Hitler might well have won the war. So let's remember that Russians were on the side of Hitler before they were against him. And the Cold War being over, is it? Vladimir Putin is very much a fanboy of the Cold War. I don't think it's over in his mind. I don't think the cyber attacks are over. I don't think interfering with our elections is over. So we need to consider that. I just wanted to point that out. And as far as Trump quoting Hitler and Trump, they go back. Hitler used to read Trump's Mein Kampf on his nightstand. It's the only book he's ever read.
You mean Trump used to read Hitler's?
Yeah.
Yes, Trump read Mein Kampf. That's his favorite book. It's the only book he can actually probably read.
Did they have pictures in it?
Pretty much almost illiterate otherwise. Well, it's pretty simple.
I know.
It's just a bunch of hate.
Hey, Scotty, thank you for the call. Let's let Sandy respond.
Well,
you said a mouthful.
Yeah, well, you know, we have maintained and developed a new arm's length relationship with Russia. I think it's different than the Cold War. The Cold War was ideological. The current animosity is not ideological in the same fashion. It's not communism versus democracy or capitalism. I mean, Russia has its own perverted form of capitalism that is oligarchism, essentially. And I fear that America might be headed in the same direction. You know, we have a great deal of power being held now in the hands of the terribly wealthy, and that's not a good thing. So, you know, I think a lot of what you've said, however, is accurate. And I think the most accurate thing you said is that we need to be aware of and afraid of somebody who uses verbiage in the nature of that being used by Donald Trump that harks back to the world's worst nightmare of the 20th century. And are we going to resurrect that here in America?
Let's go to Cindy from Appleton. Good morning to you, Cindy. Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Well, first of all, I would like to say that the Europeans were the ones that poisoned the bloodlines. As soon as we got here, we started poisoning bloodlines because the indigenous people are the true people of this nation.
No question.
And we have not only poisoned their blood, we've poisoned their land, and we have been creating genocide on that people for decades, well, not decades, for centuries. And the thing is, if we're not careful, history will repeat itself, and we will go back into a Hitler-like, genocide to many more people. And I just think, how can anybody be so ignorant as to buy into this? And there are a lot of people that are buying into this poisoning of the blood, which to me is just absolutely absurd, because all of our bloods have been poisoned since the Pilgrims landed in Plymouth Rock.
Let me just point out that people have talked for a while about the white nationalists in prison, right? The prison tattoos,
right,
that people get in for white nationalism, and the whole cult of white nationalism is the purity of blood. And so, you know, we've got a presidential candidate who's talking like a prison white nationalist, and that's horrifying. Horrifying.
Hey, Cindy, thank you very much. As always, you know, truthful commentary. Let's go to CJ. Good morning to you, CJ. You say what?
Good morning, Earl and Sandy. We're safer and more prosperous.
Hey, CJ, what are your thoughts about Donald Trump and his verbiage?
You got Tom that calls every time, and he starts off with a statement that he believes. Well, fairness, that's what I believe. You got Christopher Wray, who just the director of the FBI, who just testified. He sees blinking lights going off everywhere he looks. That's our FBI director.
Hey, CJ.
That's what
CJ. Again, what does that have to do with Donald Trump ramping up hate, vile language, dangerous rhetoric that serves no purpose in a nation that is trying to pull itself together? I don't understand that.
Well, Earl, again, thanks for taking my call, but I've been on hold for since you were talking about the corrupt press.
Okay. Well, you had an option. You could have hung up.
No, I didn't. But anyways, we're watching the destruction of our country within. We're willing to spend, and you speak of rhetoric. Well, I think President Biden's poll numbers believe that President Trump is right. There's a right way and a legal way for immigration. It's crying out. Our FBI director, sitting next to our Homeland Security do-nothing Mayorkas, along with the do-nothing
Okay, CJ.
Instead of cutting you off, let's just a bit of discourse here. Do you or do you not have a view with respect to Trump using the term poisoning America's blood? I mean, what do you think that language is about, and is it troublesome to you or not? I mean, is it not evocative of a racial view of things? What could it possibly mean for him to use the term poisoning the blood of America?
Sandy, that's what your party has to do.
No, wait. Just CJ, I'm not talking parts. I just want to know whether you're worried about an individual who's using that language, because that's
running for president.
That's running for president, because that language to me is very worrisome. And I just wonder, so I guess your answer to my question is, to you, that language is not worrisome. Is that true?
Well, you know, that's, well, you know, I'm not going to answer your question because it's a loaded question.
No, it's not. Okay. No, CJ, it's not a loaded question. We simply are talking about an individual who's talking like this while he runs for president. That's a commentary that everybody is having, actually. The Wall Street Journal's talking about it. Every news media.
New York Times, Washington Post. It's either yes or no. You know, either agree with it or you don't.
Well, you know, they worry about whether he's going to attack his political foes, you know, if he becomes president.
Hey CJ.
President Biden.
Thank you very much for the call. Thank you very much for the call. You know, it's not just frustrating. I'm not even thinking about the last caller. I mean, if you ask that question to, you know, millions and millions of Americans, they would agree with what Trump is saying. That's the that's the inherent danger.
Well, I think the inherent danger is that Chris Christie's right. It is blowing the whistle, and there are a bunch of people who won't talk about it, who will be sympathetic to that view. And it's a worldwide movement. It's happening across the world. There is this sort of tribal reaction to an influx of people who are outside the tribe.
All right, 844-967-2789. Susan, I see you. Don't hang up. We'll be right back. Sooner or later.
Ludwig von Beethoven.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. And before we went to break, we were talking about Donald Trump, who is, you know, exposing who he really is and what his plans are more and more each day. And he used some verbiage the other day that denoted, you know, purifying the blood of Americans. And let's go to Sandy from Kenosha. Susan from Kenosha, good morning to you, Susan. How are you?
I'm fine. Good morning to you and Sandy. I love Tuesday mornings. So it's nice to listen to people who are somewhat intelligent and who actually recognize what's going on. The other gentleman is older and he is in fear of change. And that is what this whole thing revolves around, is that we have people coming in from different countries. And of course, the person of white skin is not going to be in the majority very soon. I don't even think it's in the majority right now. And I really don't care, because I think that each new group of people that come in, they bring a little something from their ancestors, their people that they grew up with, their language, everything. I think it's beautiful. But when you live in this constant fear and you have this racism that was beat into you, you have to realize that these people are scared. And so Trump is working with intimidation, he's working with name calling, and he's working with fear. And so he's going to get these people all hepped up, and they're going to be doing things that they normally wouldn't do, but they're going to do it anyways because they want to conquer the unknown. And you can't. You just have to go with the flow and live with people. I think it's great. I think I love it. I think it's great. I talk to people all the time. I donate my time. And then I work a part-time job. But I like to learn what other people do, like for Christmas, the holidays, how they educate their children.
Hey, Susan, you know, we're all human beings and from different parts of the world. And so we're all equal from the perspective of we're human beings. And all the rest of those things that, you know, Donald Trump and others are trying to enact really aren't worth a hill of beans. In the end, the Americans, that's everybody, right? This is the human family is in America. Sandy, you travel the world. You go to the places where you go and there's a segment of people in China, the Chinese are there. If you went to Japan, Japanese are there. If you went to Burmese, those people are there. But when you come to America, the whole human family is here.
Well, you know, I saw a clip of Ronald Reagan, and in it he was saying, you know, you can go to China, but you can't become a Chinaman. You can go to Japan, you can't become a Japanese. But when you come to America, you can become an American, no matter. And, you know, I haven't agreed with many things Ronald Reagan has said and did, but I do agree with that completely. And, you know, if you look at what is being contributed to America by people who are, under Donald Trump's definition, probably poisoning our blood, the CEO of Microsoft from India, you know, the healthcare practitioners we have are from, many of them from all over the world, okay? And that's true in every profession. It's true in every area of work. And every area of play. And so it's just poison. It's poison, and it's poison without purpose, other than, as Susan said, to stoke some form of primal fear.
Hey, Susan, thank you very much for the call, as always. Hey, let's go to Jack from Racine. Good morning to you, Jack. You say what?
Good morning. I read something yesterday that I think is appropriate. This is from a writer, a Jewish man who was hiding in Ashnedi, Netherlands during the World War II. And he published a magazine while he was in hiding, actually. This is in yesterday's New York Times. And, you know, if we want a democracy, we need truth from our leaders or democracy doesn't work. And I think this verse, just four lines, explains how to interpret Trump's propaganda. So he wrote this about Joseph Goebbels, how to read his propaganda, the information minister for Adolf Hitler during World War II. So from hiding in Netherlands, he wrote about Goebbels, if he writes straight, read it crooked. If he writes crooked, read it straight. Yes, just turn his writings around. In all his useful words, harm is found. And, you know, we can't seem to learn that history repeats itself because there's too many people just watching it repeat itself today.
Hey, Jack, thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much for calling. Really appreciate it, Sandy.
Well, I would just say that, for those of us in America who think it can't happen here, and that for those of us who think that there are checks and balances, I think we should hark back to the fact that in 1935 and 1936, Germany, an awful lot of the people who were embracing and swinging in the direction of what became the Nazi movement thought they were doing the right thing, felt they were responding to an important national call for patriotism, and they did, in fact, bring prosperity to Germany. So people don't do things because they know them to be bad. They do them because they think they're doing the right thing. But people who think they're doing the right thing by Donald Trump need to think again.
All right. You guys hang on the phone lines. Don't touch that dial, you and the listening audience. You can join us at 844-967-2789. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. You can join us.